Okay, welcome back everybody, including up in Desert Snoshin. And we're going to try to pursue further the Kuzari, and it's a very different style, very unusual style of delving into different matters of Machshava. We're in the Maimer HaSheni, and the regular prints, it's on page 81, or Eis Chaf Hei, in the Maimer HaSheni. And we stopped at a point where it switches. There was a discussion of Eretz Yisrael, which we ended last year, very appropriately, since I went to Eretz Yisrael. And it goes on to a totally new topic here, in Maimer HaSheni, Eis Chaf Hei, and there are a couple of general points I'm going to want to make before we see how the Kuzari deals with it. But first, let's see the question in Chaf Hei. Omar Kuzari Yaspik Li Be'inyin Zeh. All right, a previous discussion, I've heard enough. It's adequate. Ve'eretz ha'ata she'tikrav li ma'shekarosiv bi'karbonos. Now I want you to make understandable to me what I've read in the Torah about karbonos. Now, if you think about it, a lot of the Torah is karbonos. I mean, Vayikra. And here and there in Bereishis you have a couple of bring in places where you bring karbanis. And so it's a big part of the Chumash. And he says, explain this karbanis business to me. It's something illogical. It's hard for the mind to understand. It says in the Torah, my carbon, which is my food, my bread, for my fire, that is a pleasant smell to me. What does it mean that it's God's bread and God's pleasant odor, a pleasant scent? Now here, I want to make a point to you. This is written, or refers to what was said about 1300 or 1400 years ago in the time of the Khuzars. Reminded of one of the Arsameach plays, I was never in an Eretz when they did it, but they have videos of it. And one of the hilarious points is where they're interviewing this Baal Tshuva who now wants to go out and be Makar of the world. So he has all his questions ready that he expects, and then he gets up in front of an audience, and they say, please explain to everybody, you know, when Mashiach comes, you're going to sacrifice animals. Why? And, you know, it's like the last thing you want to be asked is why would anybody sacrifice an animal, shecht it, then spritz its blood and burn it? Modern man has no room for understanding the sacrificial order. It's not something that I prefer to discuss in a non-religious company because, you know, the Torah says do some things we don't understand. So we shake the lulav this way and that way. You don't understand it? Okay, it doesn't go against the grain of modern man. But sacrificing an animal, spraying the blood, burning, why burn the meat? Give it to some poor people. Why are you burning the meat? The fact that it's difficult to explain rationally, the idea of karbanis is an issue. Now, the Rambam, because of this, made his very famous statement, which wouldn't be so famous except everyone who argues with him quotes it, including the Ramban. It really, you know, sometimes someone says something, if you pretend you don't notice it, nobody would notice it. But when you notice it, and you repeat it, it becomes famous. So the Ramban writes in the Mar Nevuchim that karbanis inherently don't make sense, but because the idol worshippers had karbanis, and Jews would be tempted to offer sacrifices. So God said, you know what, if you'll offer a sacrifice, offer it to me. That's the way the Rambam appears to explain it in the Mar Nevuch. So he's taken to task. He says, what? You know, Adam brought a carbon, there were no idol worshippers, and Noach brought a carbon, there were no idol worshippers after the Mabel. And it says, Reach Dichayach. So, well, what is he talking about? Adam, there was nobody around. And after the Mabel, there was nobody around. The day Noach gets out of the Teva, he brings a carbon. There's nobody around. It's just him and his children, right? So, he brings a carbon.
Future generations.
she's bringing it now for future generations. Well, okay. It's hard. It's a very, very difficult thing. The Arsameya says that the Rambam, agrees that there's an idea of karbanos. He's referring to the heter bamos. In the Beis HaMikdash, there's an idea of karbanos. Reich Nechach. But the fact that there were periods in time where people were allowed to bring private sacrifices, he says that's what the Rambam was referring to. It's also not a satisfying approach. So the Rambam's approach generally is, people, find fault with it. There are those who, including Rav Tzadik, who have approaches that are, a little more logical, but that's not my point. My point is this: the apikarsis in the world takes on many different faces. The rejection of Hashem and Torah changes. There's a famous svart, I don't remember who it originated from, but when Esav, the sire of Esav, fights with Yaakov, and Yaakov says, "What's your name?" So the sire of Esav says, "Lama zeh tishalishmi? Why are you asking me my name?" So there are those who interpret it to mean that Esav takes on plenty of different names. In one generation, his name is communism or socialism. In one generation, it's idol worship. In one generation, it's Christianity. And it takes on many, many different names. So lama zeh tishalishmi, it changes. What's incredible is that after Yetzirah apikarsis disappears, in the next generation, it's ridiculous. Certainly to us, idol worship is absurd. It's disappeared a very long time ago. The fact that there were Jews who were passionate about communism just 100 years ago, to us, it's a bankrupt, a failed system. So we don't understand it. So I want to explain to you that when the Kuzar asks, how are you going to explain karbanis? You talked to matter and man. How are you going to explain karbanis? The question is, it doesn't make sense. Why would anybody offer a sacrifice? That's not what bothered the Kuzar. You'll see from his question and from his answer. He didn't say, why offer sacrifices? The sacrifices is a waste of good meat. He didn't say that. His problem is that it depends how you believe in God. A lot of different gods in the Dark Ages, in the Middle Ages. He says, your God is purely spiritual. So, what does it mean, lachmi? Why, what does it mean he's eating this bread? What does it mean he's eating the carbon? Or reich nechayach, what does it mean that he's has pleasure from a good smell of a carbon? You see, his problem was not modern man's problem. It's not our problem. It's not the Rambam. The Rambam was 400 years later. The time of the Kuzars, that wasn't a problem, because that wasn't an issue. It's hard for us to understand. There was a significant period of time in the history of the world where there was a Yetzirah to give physical attributes, midos, and physical form to God. And we don't understand it. Either you believe in God, you don't believe in God. Why would anybody have a Yetzirah to say that God throws temper tantrums and has bad midas like the, you know, like the Greek gods who became the superheroes of today? All the people don't realize, all the superhero, the comic book superheroes of our day, not including Superman and Batman, but the others, right, Zeus and Hercules, these were all Greek gods, but they really believed in this stuff. Every time a Yetzirah disappears, the Yetzirah becomes silly. But when it's there, it's real. It's really, really real. I once heard Rav Schwab, Zichrono Livracha, speak. He spoke about the pursuit of money, which we all understand, right? We understand it. So he spoke about the pursuit of money. He said, I once heard from a holy Jew, he said, from a great man, that just like today, there are some religious people who will not say the word chazer, the English word for a chazer. They'll say dover acher. Right? The Europeans say dover acher. They don't want to say that. Or Rashi doesn't want to talk about Sarah. Sometimes he says a neg, he calls it dover acher. So he said, in Mashiach's days, they'll call money the dover acher. They'll call money the dover acher. It's, you know, it's the, well, people running after money. What are people running after money for? Now, I understand we run after money so we can do good things with it. Right? Not everything we do is necessarily good things. Some things are power of things, but we understand it. The point he was making is that when the Yetzirah disappears, it seems silly. So here, we're learning the Kuzari. The questions are intelligent questions. Why does the Torah say it's God's bread? We understand when it talks about God's hand. Yimincha Hashem. We have no problem with it. God's right hand, God's left hand. We understand that it's a figurative idea. It's not a physical idea. We don't have a Yetzirah to attribute physical things to the Rabbi Nishalayim. But it's hard to believe in the Middle Ages there was such a Yetzirah to attribute to HaKadosh Baruch Hu physical attributes. That Yetzirah is really the focus of the King of the Kuzars. He is saying that, what does it mean, God's bread? There's a certain hint here that God doesn't have the form that you describe him as having. That's his presentation of the problem. That's not the way we would say it. If you had to, you know, like I said, if you got on the national TV and they interviewed you and they said, how do you explain the sacrificial order? They don't mean, what does it mean, Reach Dechaychi? What does it mean? It smells good to God. That's okay, you know, it can smell good to God, but what's the purpose in it? That would be our question today.
At that time, did they have the principle of Dibra Torah, Kabbalah, and the other? There's probably an idea to be expressed, but it hasn't been
Lashem B'nei Yadam. I'll tell you, when you say Dibritek Lashem B'nei Yadam, it's logical. When you have a Yetzirah for something, it sounds like an apology. It sounds like an excuse. In other words, when you have a Yetzirah to say God has a hand, and someone tells you Dibritek Lashem B'nei Yadam, it's just an expression, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound... doesn't sound like a good thing. If your boss tells you, I'll pay you if you do a day's work, and he says, you know, I only meant, I didn't mean money, I meant, I'll pay you with compliments, you know, it doesn't, there's no leaning towards it, there's no desire to accept it. When there were certain Yetzirahs in the history of the world, it's just very hard to understand. Even today, Christianity, which believed in multiple gods and a trinity, it's hard to us to understand, like it's, today, man doesn't want to believe in one God. So, you know, trying to push three gods on them. And even they themselves, they're not pushing the three gods anymore. They're going with the one, you know, with the one that's the child they're going with. But, because today, there's no taiva to have many gods. We have Ani Mamin, the Kadosh Baruch Hu is one, and not many. It's hard for us to understand. Who needs multiple gods? But there was such an idea to believe in multiple gods, and with that to explain why there's good in the world, bad in the world, etc. So, you know, if you believe that Zeus and Hercules and all the others are a bunch of troublemakers upstairs, so then it doesn't bother you that how could God do such things down here. But if you believe God is good, so then it troubles you. How can evil people be successful in this world?
Also, was it the Rambam who said that really if you do a chet, and his mercy allowed you to substitute a carbon so that you didn't have to die? Wasn't it the Rambam who explained
the
like that?
No, I don't remember the Rambam saying it. You may be referring to someone else.
The Rambam, that being done to the carbon, it should be done.
Okay, that Rambam. Could be. There's an explanation of the Rambam that says the following. We go with the model of the world being comprised of doimeim, tsoimeach, chai medaber, of being comprised of inanimate things, such as stones, and flower, things that grow from the ground, and animals, and human beings. On the mizbeach, if you think about it, we offer as a sacrifice an animal, a chai. We offer as a sacrifice things that grow, which is wine and flour. And
what is
Chaim's here, otherwise I'd get everybody. I'd ask people, what's the thing that's offered on the Mizbeach the most times? Animals, flour, or wine? The answer is salt. Every carbon needed salt. And in my family, we like salt. Haimi makes me salt bagels. I like salt, because under Mizbeach, everything had salt, right? It was well salted. So I'm getting back. So the Mizbeach is an idea. In nature, everything moves naturally up. If you put a seed in ground, the seed doesn't give its nutrients to the ground. The ground gives its nutrients to the seed. Because everything wants to move up. In nature, everything wants to become higher. So it's natural for the daimen, for the earth, to give its minerals or its moisture to the seed, which is the tzemeach. In nature, the tzemeach, the things that grow, are eaten by animals. So it goes, the tzemeach naturally moves up to becoming part of a living form. The living forms, for a great part, are eaten by human beings. So that it goes up to a higher level as well. Everything looks to move to a higher level. On the Mizbeach, the burning of Korbanos to Mizbeach are symbolic of an elevation of something God created in a Gashmistika world to a spiritual purpose. So you put it on the Mizbeach, it's elevated to something spiritual. And it's used as a mitzvah, it's destroyed as part of the mitzvah process. Now the Gemara says that when somebody brings a carbon and sees the carbon burnt, he should imagine as if he was burnt, as if it was his bones and his flesh and his skin. It's very hard to understand. Because the carbon could be for an aveira done b'shaygeg, by accident. Why should he imagine himself being burnt for that? The carbon could be not even for an aveira. Could be a carbon taida. Thank you, carbon. So why would anybody want to imagine as if he's being burnt? And again, the answer is that no, we don't mean being burnt, we mean being elevated. Being elevated, we don't put human beings in the fire, but the imagination is that the person's physicality can be elevated to something on a higher spiritual level. Rav Futner writes, to explain the Rambam, this Tchias HaMesim, and the Rambam says the ultimate reward is just the neshama, not the body. Which means that after Tchias HaMesim, people will die. It's a very hard thing to understand. Why do a Tchias HaMesim if people are going to die again? And in one of his letters, Rav Futner explains it very beautifully. He says, well, not everyone agrees with the Rambam. I'm just coming to explain the Rambam. He says that in the existence of today's world, a person dies because he runs out of life. He becomes laying a wheel, or he's harmed, and he dies. There's a different level. That would be Tchias HaMesim. For those that were killed or those who died from illness, there's Tchias HaMesim. The idea of Yemais HaMashiach is to elevate the neshama to such a level that the neshama sheds the body like a person sheds his clothing. It's not death in the idea of death as we know it in Olam Hazeh. The death of Tchias HaMesim, of after Tchias HaMesim, is an elevation. Where the person's neshama becomes so elevated, so raised, that it doesn't need the guf. It's hard to explain. I remember once, I used to see Rav Moshe in shul, and when he gave shir, and davening in his house. No, I ever saw. One day, I came early to Milchad, he was eating an apple. I couldn't believe Rav Moshe would eat an apple. To me, like, why would he eat an apple? It was so, like, Rav Moshe eating an apple? I know, it was just so, then I watched him eat it, it wasn't, he had all this chumris with bayrer, so they cut the apple. He didn't cut out anything. So first he bit the end and spit out the little piece that grows at the end, the other end in the middle. It was just very, it would have been nice to film. So the way he ate the apple, he was thinking about Shulchan Aruch. But my point is, when I saw him eating an apple, like, you're eating an apple, you know, like it's, you know, like you'd see, I once said in a shir, imagine you see Reb Shmuel Birnbaum waiting in line at the ice cream store for an ice cream, and then asking for sprinkles. Right? It would be ridiculous. So I mentioned that, imagine Rabbi Miller doing it. And they said, no, Rabbi Miller would do it. He would say, look at the beauty of this. He would see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in it. But anyway, my point is, there's an elevated spirit where the neshama sheds the guf. When the neshama doesn't need the guf. So Rav Hugger explains that's the idea of Tchias HaMesim. The idea of the Karbanos, in this understanding, as an idea of elevating something and making it spiritual. The Gashmiistic world, our belief is that the physical world is a very temporal world. It's not real, it's not reality. Reality is the spiritual world. And the Baal HaTanya said that while everyone says God created Yesh Me'ayin in this world, He created the world something from nothing, ex nihilo. So he said, no, really in this world, God created a bunch of nothing from something. The spiritual world is something. All this stuff that we have around here, you know, it's really nothing from something. It just feels like something from nothing. So there is that higher level, and that's an idea of what the Karbonis sort of represent in a synopsis, in a brief understanding. The Karbonis were a major part of Jewish life. They're a major part of Jewish life, and if someone had a child, he brought a carbon, and if someone, was Ivar Mitzvah, brought a carbon, or an Isashaygek, he brought a carbon. There were numerous occasions besides the voluntary carbon and the carbon that comes from the Tzibor. It was very much a part of life. And therefore, it's a legitimate question to understand the Karbonis in general. That's not the Kuzar's question. His question is, why is it called God's bread? Why is it called a Reach? So let's begin the answer of the Chavar. We're not going to get to the guts of it tonight, but let's at least give it a start. Omer HaChavar. Masha Omer Li'ishai Miyasher Kol HaKasha. The word Li'ishai answers the question. Let's look at the Pasuk again, which you brought earlier. Es Karboni Lachmi, my carbon, my bread, Li'ishai, for my fire. So he's saying Lachmi doesn't mean God's bread, that God consumes it, but that God's fire consumes it. So Mashamar Li Ishai Miyasher Kolkasha. The fact that it says this is bread for my fire answers the question. Hu Aimer. Now, if you have my print, you'll see a long Kol Yehuda. I'm not going to go through it, but I'll explain to you what it's about. First, let's read the words. Getting back to the words. Hu Aimer Ki Akarben Ahu Vahalechem Reich Nichayach Eshem Yuchasim Elai Omnam Heim Li Ishai. These words, which you see when you read the pasuk, to refer to God, they actually refer to God's fire. Ratzalaymer ha'esha nif'eles l'dvara yisbarach, asher ma'achola ha'karbonis. That fire, which represents the nifal, the actions to follow God's words, that is what eats the karbonis. V'akach yechlu ha'kayinim shar chalka. So a chelik goes to the fire, a chelik goes to the kain. Va'kavana bezet tikon haseder, and the kavana in this is, now here, crucial words but hard words. Kedei sheyuchol bay hamelech chul, they put it chayel chul, chul gedayla leichul makim. Now I want to gedula leichul makim. I want to explain my understanding. The word chul here means chalais. Let me say today. What he's saying is that the purpose of burning the carbon, feeding it to the kayin, is a chalois gedula and not a chalois makim. There's nothing about the place or, so to speak, the God's house where it's being eaten, but rather a desire for something greater, something bigger. Now what that means is the subject of the Kol Yehuda. He has a very long arichos here underneath. The Kol Yehuda goes in an approach where he explains the symbolic meaning of everything that took place in the Mishkan. In other words, he gets into nitty-gritty of everything that took place in the Mishkan, everything related to the human being, all symbolizes something, and the fire represents the fire of a human personality. The fire, the brand of a human personality, that's represented. And we have to light our fire, so to speak, with God's karbanis, with God's... That's the chalois gedula in his understanding. So that's something, as I said, that gets into symbolism, which some people like more, some people like less. It's a matter of taste. The Tzenechman, on the other hand, has a totally different approach. His approach here is a simpler approach. And he says that the karbonis is supposed to get a person thinking. The idea of a carbon, of coming to a Beis HaMikdash and offering sacrifices, are supposed to be the motivation for some soul searching, some inner thinking. You come to a Beis HaMikdash, we don't realize the beauty of a Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, first of all, everything was exact, everything was precise. You talk about L'Havdil, the changing of the guard. You're talking now about a whole Beis HaMikdash that worked with precision by people that were godly people, people that were elevated people. And miracles took place in the Beis HaMikdash on a daily basis. If a Rebbe wanted to take his class on a trip, he can take him to the Beis HaMikdash any morning and watch the Kayin take the Trumas HaDeshen, walk over to the side of the Mizbeach, drop it, and it was swallowed up by the earth on a daily basis, even the Bayis Sheni. Miracles took place there, even though God doesn't do miracles for nothing. It was done as part of the majesty of the Beis HaMikdash. When a Jew came to the Beis HaMikdash, there were places he couldn't walk. Most of the Beis HaMikdash couldn't walk. It was a place of awe, a place where people came and it moved them. You talk about going to a great person and watching a great person, it moved them. It created a certain soul searching. It was a chalos gedula. And that idea is the idea of the carbon, the way the Eitz of Nechman explains it. And Yitz Hashem, next time I will continue on this theme.